443 on Downtown. Oh, look at that, huh?
Ah. So good. We're playing, actually, we're playing this too.
161 performing live.
Yeah, I was going to plug it later, but these headphones, we got to get new headphones in here. I'm bringing new headphones next week. Yeah, we're my band 161 is playing at the Bangor Arts Exchange this Saturday. It's part of the Class of 1998 reunion package, as well as available to non-98ers. I am not a 98er. I graduated from high school in 96. When'd you graduate, Rich?
20 years before that.
Ah. And joyeux anniversaire to you.
Merci.
Yeah. Très bien. I don't know why we're speaking French, because we're about to, I think. Yes, was that? Oh, good. Yeah, so as I teased earlier, my buddy Chris Campbell's up in Maine, which is his favorite place to be. We're both from the Jersey, Manhattan, tri-state area. And so we understand each other when we come up here. And I stayed, and he keeps going back for some reason. Mm. But yeah. Yeah, hi, Chris.
Excessive responsibilities. That's the only reason.
I have excessive responsibilities. I localize them in Bangor, Chris.
I always feel semi-guilty every time I cross south. But it's good to be back.
Cool. So as I was telling people, we're talking Iberian Peninsula this month in the Message in the Bottle series. And I usually start by talking about Spain and then finish with Portugal. But since you're here, of course, you know a lot about Spain. But tell the world why we need to start talking about Portugal in a more serious light.
Well, I mean, it's always, again, it's great when we talk about Iberia for people to remember. It's all the same peninsula, Portugal and Spain. It's amazing how much they have in common, but for being so close together, how different they are. Today's image worldwide, I think of Spain as a fairly extroverted country, from all their exports, from great soccer players to the growth in the Spanish wine market, which I've seen personally over the last 13 years. It speaks to how far and wide their culture has been received outside of the perimeter that's known as the Spanish border. The opposite, I think, would have to be said for Portugal, although now, in the current mode in the wine world, the need for things of great value have shown its moment again in the financial period this country has just gone through, and seems to be kind of languishing in this concern of, do we spend too much? And people start to become more careful about what they spend. Smart retailers and people like myself, who like to try to feed them in the restaurants that we call our customers, are paying attention to Portugal, because Portugal can't be touched in terms of quality and value right now. I think for diversity of flavor, they have every kind of wine you could imagine, from the big full-bodied oak-driven things that come from Alentejo down south to the Douro Tintos, which kind of mimic what was going on in Ribeira do Douro, although I'm kind of critical of some of the moments that Portugal has found itself in, because they've chosen to kind of try to just mimic as opposed to innovate,
right?
Or just be themselves. It's a moment where swimming in the deep end requires a lifeguard. And I think that's where you, as a retailer and the restaurateur who makes their choices, have the opportunity to help people find great bottles of wine and not just simply encounter the things that people in Portugal thought were good enough to send away because they were cheap. There's a lot of internal criticism. They're fairly introverted people, great people in terms of culture and food, but in terms of how the rest of the world got to know them, their efforts in colonization early on and their exploits world over as travelers and discoverers precedes them. But the overwhelming feeling in Portugal of that time is this thing that they call saudade, which is the sadness for what was.
Mm.
And there is a whole thing through Brazilian music and that whole samba thing that the Portuguese had such an influence on in South America that is almost easily laid over the wine world, and you can see how people just went far enough and not all the way and invested themselves in two of those wines that I left you with earlier today when we were together in person. Kind of, I feel like the exclamation points for how things can be really good,
right,
quality wise, and deliver a price point. But did you taste them with your?
Well, no.
Your
so course? We're here. We'll do it right now. So the one of the first things you were talking about is what the Portuguese felt they should be sending out sort of as their face and. Vino Verde. So we have a Vino Verde that Chris imports called Tucas. But of course, there's been a lot of sort of inferior Vino Verde. So talk to us a little bit about this wine and why, even at a fantastic price point, this is something that's a good representation of how they're changing the face of Portuguese Vino Verde.
Yeah, well, Vino Verde is the great one to begin with because we're in that season where this style of wine is particularly appropriate, thirst-quenching. It's not a very potent wine, if you will. I mean, there's beers in Maine that are stronger than this wine. It's a 9.5% right. alcohol. So that's an important thing to take note. It's kind of an easy wine to drink at the party in the afternoon. You're at the beach, wherever you're doing. It's a hard wine to let get away from you in that sense. You know, it's nice. It's got that slight effervescence that so many people have been kind of trained to believe that Vino Verde is defined by.
Right.
Lazy journalists have kind of decided that calling it adult soda pop is cute, and that's a way to sell it. And I think that's fine, but I think it's also halfway, and it seems like everyone wants to have things in a tight and easy little box. And Vino Verde is actually not simply fizzy wine. There's red wine from Vino Verde. There's rosé. Right. Most of them don't have effervescence to them. And I'll go so far as to say that 90% of the ones that have effervescence in them, it's false. It's just basically a tank of CO2 that's attached to the tank before they bottle. They push the bubbles in.
Right.
And you can tell when you're drinking those wines, the kind of persistence of the bubble. If it's like a soda bubble, you know that it's fake. But the little fine bubble that's in the Tucas, that'll dissipate over time. And you can get into the moment where if you were, I don't know, it never happens in my house, but if you open a bottle of Tucas and come back to it in a day, it'll be less fizzy, though it'll still be slightly there.
Right.
And then day two, it might be gone entirely. Still drinkable and delicious, but not in the style that the winemaker intended, because that bubble is truly the residual CO2 that's left over after fermentation. And historically speaking, when you have to ship wine away from where you made it, which wasn't the common thing. Most people would make the wine, and the wine stayed at their house where they drank it.
Mm-hmm.
But as wineries became businesses, and wine had to go down, say, from Vino Verde, which would be up north on the northern border of what is Portugal to Spain, there the Minho River, and had to get down to Lisbon, by leaving that little bit of CO2 suspension, it saved a step. You didn't have to rack the wine before you bottled it.
Right.
But you by leaving the suspension of the CO2 there, it acted like a natural shock absorber, so the wine stayed intact better.
Right.
And it's also kind of a text, like stylistically speaking, it became considered part of the character of the wine. People became expectant of it in a certain way.
Right, so, like all great foods that have traveled the world, it was practicality that sort of influenced the overall shape of the thing.
The good stories in the wine business always make a lot of sense.
It's true.
Common sense leads all the great agricultural developments, and usually all the great culinary developments.
Well, it's hard to regrow grapes in a vintage. It's, you sort of get one shot, so you got to get it right. Before we run out of time, I wanted to talk about this new wine that you introduced me to today. This blend from the Dow. Tell the folks a little bit about that, because that's going to be making an appearance at Bangor Wine and Cheese for certain.
Okay, well, appropriately, it's called Insurgente, which means the insurgent. We hear a lot about insurgency in more troubled parts of the world these days, but the word itself means the rebel, the one who would stand up and be different. And my friend Francisco, who makes that wine, decided that was a good name for this project because he was really tired of looking around at his peers and seeing like how they made decisions. Yeah, that's good enough to send away. And he knows the way I like to sell wine, and he knew that he was going to become part of what I sold in terms of that education. Like, this is the person who makes this wine, and he's decided that making something of quality while being still of value, I think you'll probably be something that's a bottle of wine that's going to be $16 or $17 maybe. In store.
Oh, yeah, somewhere. I mean, it's right in the meat of the best inventory in the world. You know, for folks is that sort of teens. It's a really nice sweet spot, and this hits that absolutely. But it's going to surprise people. It really is, because I think as you were hinting, there's a lot of Portuguese wines out there that are a little overdone, a little bit maybe, as you say, maybe trying to imitate Ribera del Duero or simply trying to please the American
simple,
market too hard.
Or too complicated. And this is one, he's kind of using old world methods in that he's fermenting it in an open concrete vat, a thing they call a Lagarde.
Right.
Foot trodden agitation, you know, I Love Lucy style.
Oh, yeah.
Step on the grapes to begin it. And then you rack it into stainless steel to let it finish fermenting. And the grapes he's using there are Torrija Nacional at 50% and 50% of a grape called Alfachero, which in Spanish, they refer, in Spain's growing regions of Galicia, where you can find it in, out in the Canary Islands, they call it Boboso. But the continental cultivation of Alfachero gives you a fruit that's got some really beautiful texture, a little bit of grippy tannin, and a ripe fruit. So it pairs really well with the Torrija Nacional, which often gets compared to Cabernet Sauvignon. So
right.
I was pouring that for folks at a festival recently. They like, do you have any Cabernet Sauvignon? And you know me, I never have
right.
Cabernet Sauvignon. So I try to do what I can with the grapes that the Iberians give us to play. But it's producing a lot of really pleasurable responses. And I think it's one of those reds that drinks kind of like Burgundy. Pinot Noir drinkers might find something they can agree
yeah.
with to a West Coast comparison.
Yep.
And yet there's none of the bad tannin from New Oak. So really good summer wine that can take a chill if you decide to go that way.
Yeah, no, it's immediately appealing and yet just slightly left of where you expect, which is always my favorite kind of wine. I don't like wines that are kind of exactly what I thought they'd be, unless they're really exquisite wines. But I like wines that kind of make my mind go,
Yeah, why pick up the book if you know how it ends?
That's why I like Chris. See, people don't understand this about Chris. Chris is responsible for not just me, but there's countless of us scattered amongst the wine world that were sort of acolytes of this guy. And he's not. He's just a couple years older than me, but he's always, you know, spewing these little nuggets of wisdom that we were just like, oh, it's beautiful. He's an artist. He is. He should be a poet. You should be a poet.
Well, you'll let your wine do the speaking.
That's good. That's smart.
I appreciate the praise, Eric. It's always been a pleasure. It was nice to see you today. And again, I do appreciate all the support that the wine drinkers of Maine have given the producers I work with, because they don't know it in the moment that they're opening that bottle, but maybe if they're listening today, they can understand there's a lot of people who've come here from Spain with no knowledge of what a place known as Maine was.
Right.
And they've been here now and they see it and they go, wow, this is a beautiful place. And then when they realize how much wine they actually sell here as compared to maybe in New York, and that New York really isn't consuming that much more. It's not that we're not selling a lot of wine. We are. It's just that the folks who have endeavored to kind of embrace the new and the maybe the exotic in the moment wines on your shelves are getting more for their money.
That's right. So, well, you know, it takes a bold person to live in Maine, be in Maine, and drink wine here in Maine. We got to run, Chris. We're running out of time, unfortunately, but thank you so much for calling in, bud, and I'll see you next time you're up here in the Bangor region.
Thank you for having me. Remember, the good wines leave a mark, guys.
Yes, sir. Cheers.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right. So, folks, again, that's Chris Campbell. He's
our own version of Jersey Boys. This was great.
Yeah. He's he's good stuff. And he's a good reminder. He's always a good reminder that the importers matter, too. If you love good wine, importers matter almost just as much as producers, because importers kind of have their own thing. They don't bring in wine that they don't like. And if you like the kind of wines that Chris likes and that I like, that's a good way to find new wines that you might like. That
Vino Verde was great.
It's awesome. And then the Maria Papoya that we tried last year is the same people, but the higher end, one of the still, the one he was talking about there, they're mostly still. I did want to mention just really quick, July 19th is our month, our monthly tasting, and then Guy Chamon from Burgundy on the 7th of August. And then my band, 161, at the Bangor Arts Exchange. Come out and see us this Saturday.
And you might play the Boys of Summer.
I am playing the Boys of Summer. Yeah. We are playing. We are. The four of us actively playing Boys of Summer, Careless Whisper, and every other glorious tune you can imagine. Oh, and the other great summer song, Flagpole Sitta from, I forget the guys who sang it, but that was summer of 98.
Yeah, there you go.
Boom.
Thanks, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor.